Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the coffee table here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm Quentin Chandler, and it is 9 o'clock. Today we have a group of special guests, and I'd like to just have you guys go around the table and introduce yourselves. We're talking about alcohol and drug addiction today. And so I'm going to start off right here at the front. Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name's Tara.
Tara, thank you.
Abel.
Jill.
Tara, Abel, and Jill. And we also have on the telephone Rachel Romberg, who is with Haven House, and she's also with the MAPS Coalition. Rachel, thanks for joining us. Are you there, Rachel? Rachel, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
All right, great. We had a little mix-up there, but we are good to go now. So, Rachel, I'm going to ask you to hang in the wings there for a little bit, and we're going to talk with our guests who are here in the studio. Tara, I would like to start with you. Could you kind of just explain what Alcoholics Anonymous is? And I should explain further, everyone here in the room with me is with Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. Tara, go ahead.
Well, Alcoholics Anonymous to me is just a fellowship where we can come and learn how to stay sober. There's 12 steps to live by and principles to live by, and it's definitely changing my life.
Got you. And wondering, you know, when did you first come into Alcoholics Anonymous?
I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous through rehab. Mm-hmm.
And Abel, you're with Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm wondering if you can tell me, is there a difference there between Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous?
I actually go to both, but yeah, there's not a lot of difference between the two. Some of the wording is a little different, but all of the steps and all of the traditions of the program are the same.
Gotcha. So I would like to start with everyone here's personal stories and how they kind of came into Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to start with you, Jill, since you haven't spoken yet. Why don't you go ahead and tell us your story? How did you come into the organization, come into the group?
Well, I was really young, but my drinking had become unmanageable, where I wasn't able to function to do life without drinking, which, you know, would mean like I would have to drink before I could function or interact with the public or people. And so, and that got to be a point where I was in dangerous situations or situations where I know I had a God of my understanding taking care of me, because I put myself in situations and places that I should have never made it out of. And that's, you know, and at the end I was hospitalized, and that's where I was talked to about going to AA and rehab. And that's where I got the first message, is that you might have a problem with drinking. And it was suggested that I try to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for 90 days, just to try it for 3 months and see if things got better. And if nothing else, I could go back to drinking if I didn't think it helped.
Right. And did things get better? Did going to AA help you?
Going to AA did help. I was really young, so I didn't believe that. I had a preconceived myth that drunks were like fat, bald, and old men. And then when I showed up to AA, there was much more than that. There was people of all ages and sizes and affiliations, outside, professionals, non-professionals, blue collar, white collar, everything in there that you can imagine was there. And they all were there to help me make a better life. And so I've stayed.
I'm curious, Jill, when you were drinking and then when you first had your introduction to AA, was this in Alaska? Was it in the lower 48?
My introduction was in the lower 48, and because of the success and continued sobriety, I actually moved to Alaska. It was on a dream to come and try out an adventure.
Gotcha. And you're still an active member now, even as you say, you have started to see some success in turning your life around.
Yeah, I continue to stay because I believe that like Alcoholics gave me my life. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a way of life to live. and how can I walk away from something that's given me such a great life? It's not just that, okay, now I know how to not drink. I know how to walk through things. You know, I've walked through being fired. I've been hired. I've had relationship, had no relationships, lost apartments, lost things, lost family members, you know, walked through some illnesses, walked through close friends passing. Some were sober and some were not. And so why would I walk away with a support system that helps me walk through that and not turn my life upside down and the people around me?
Right. And we're going to go a little bit more into what happens at AA meetings and how, you know, what this support group looks like later. First, I want to go over to Abel. And Abel, you're with Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous here in Homer. Wondering if you can tell me, you know, your story, just like Jill did. How did you come into the group? What prompted you to join?
Thanks. I was a working man. I had a family. I found that my addiction kind of ran everybody away. I lost my family. I kept my job. I was trying to function. And still be a drug addict and an alcoholic. And until one day that just didn't work. I found myself definitely at the bottom and at the end of a very scary addiction. And it took somebody else to give me just a little bit of hope and an opportunity to turn my life around. And I'll forever be grateful for that. And that pushed me into seeking help in Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, and finding a better way to live, and changing my behavior and trying to be more of an asset to my community.
And that person who you say gave you a little bit of hope, was that a friend, a family member? Were they a part of AA or NA?
They weren't a part of any of the fellowships. They just had a little bit of hope in me that I could be something better.
Gotcha. And I'm going to give you the same question I gave Jill. How did it change your life?
It changed my life 100%. I had no idea it was going to be like this. I have a clear head today. I get to wake up without a hangover. I get to join family functions as a happy family member instead of a suffering one. I was suffering. I wasn't very happy, and I hurt inside. I hurt. It's a kind of pain I can't explain, but it's a kind of a hurt that the program helps me get through and taught me how to live. And today I'm a very happy person in my community, and I just want to say thank you to the program.
So was there anything specific that was a special weakness for you? Was there any specific type of alcohol? What was your drug of choice? Is where I'm going.
My drug of choice and my alcohol of choice was more.
More. Got it. Thank you very much, Tara. You're up next. What would you like to tell us about your story of coming to AA? And did you say you're a part of NA as well?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Would you share your story with us?
Sure. I guess, I've used for a long time. It started out as fun with friends and then just got a little out of control, a lot out of control, a whole lot out of control. And man, to where I didn't have any control. What do you say? Used to live and lived to used. I put it before everything. I lost everything. House, kids, family, car. You know, when you're stuck with nothing but yourself, it's a pretty dark and lonely spot. I went to jail, and that was pretty scary. And then I went back to rehab. And I really started listening to what they were saying and suggesting, and meetings of a 12-step program was vital to that. So I moved halfway across the world. I didn't have any other options. My parents said I could live with them. And the first day I got here in Homer, I found AA. I found a meeting. Shortly after that, I found a sponsor. Since then, I've gotten my kids back. I have a great job. I love my life. We have our own place. I have self-confidence back. I really lost all my self-confidence and self-worth. I was really pitiful. But now, I mean, I wake up and I'm so grateful for all the little things that I have in my life. And I owe it all to the program and the people in it. And gosh, they are such great people. I mean, I take a day with a recovering drug addict over a normal person any day, pretty much. They know exactly how I was feeling, whether they went through it or not. The feelings are all the same. And they gave me hope that there is a better life for me out there, because there was a time I didn't have it. I didn't think I could get it. I thought I'd gone too far. You know, I thought my life had been too messed up and I was too damaged, but I'm not too damaged. And I'm a good person, even though I did some really horrible things and hurt a lot of people in the process. I couldn't imagine my life being any better than it is right now. And I'm so grateful to be clean and sober today. Like, I'm so grateful. My life, I love my life. It is full.
Well, thank you, Tara. I'm thankful that you shared that story with us. And thank you, for everyone, for sharing your stories with us. I'm going to try and go a little bit deeper into what AA looks like. Wondering, Tara, we'll stay with you for a second. Can you kind of explain what happens in these meetings and why it's beneficial to you? I'll leave it there. Yeah.
Well, to me, it's beneficial to me because it's a safe place for me to go, to honestly share how I'm feeling or if I'm struggling with any thoughts of using or drinking. You know, and you get feedback, and they give you tools to go by. Tools like, you know, think it all the way through, call someone, you know, I've never been able just to pick up the phone and ask for help, but I'm getting used to that, actually using the people as a crutch to help you get through the day, because that's all you have to do. I only have to be sober today, you know, as long as I hit the pillow clean and sober, it's a pretty successful day, and I'm doing it.
Is that the same for you, Abel, that it's basically a day-by-day type of thing?
Yes, it is. When I got here, the last thing I wanted to do was go to a room and for one, be clean and be sober, but to go talk about my feelings, that was the last thing I wanted to do. And now today, that's the first thing I want to do. If I'm having a struggle, if I'm having a hard time with my day or who I am or what somebody's doing to me, I can go to a room of Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous and voice what's bothering me and ask friends in the fellowship advice or suggestions on how to deal with it. It's different being completely clean and sober from all chemical drugs and alcohol. I have to learn how to live all over again. I'm having to learn how to behave like a gentleman, and these people have been there and done that and have suggestions on how they did it, and all I got to do is ask for help, and these people are more than willing to help.
I'm wondering how long each of you have been sober. Abel, we'll stick with you first.
I got sober on March 4th, 2014.
All right, and Jill?
I've been sober 25 years.
We got people in here clapping. And Tara, what about you?
I'll have a year January 21st.
January 21st, nice. So you all have differences as far as what it was that you were struggling with, and also how long it's been since you've come into the programs. wondering if you, you know, but you still seem to have this sense of, you know, you're all in the same place. Jill, I'm going to put this to you. Is that, am I right there? Is that kind of how you feel, that you're all kind of going through the same thing, even though your experiences are different?
Yeah, I mean, the way, I guess, to a non-alcoholic, I guess, would be the way to look at it is if, like, per se, like, you have a disease. Like, say, for instance, you have a sugar intolerance, let's say. You know, so you're going to try to hang out with people and eat with people and figure out a way how to do life with people who have the same sugar intolerance would be the best way to kind of describe it. I hang out with people who I have an intolerance to alcohol. When I ingest alcohol into my system, anything goes, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I have no idea what can occur. It could be a nice, pleasant, you know, where I'm laughing and giggling, or it could turn into an evening where two or three, including myself, get arrested and we do stupid stuff. And so I find that as long as I'm around that group of people who understand that, because alcoholism to me is a disease, that I'm around people who have the disease and I know what happens, and I'm reminded, you know, and by, as people come into new meetings, when they're new and they come to a meeting, I realize that, you know, nothing's changed. If I decide to, for whatever reason, I'm having a really bad day, that no matter what, drinking does not solve the problem at hand. It's only going to compound it and make it worse. And so I find that being around people, listening to them, hearing their stories. I have a woman who I call my sponsor who's helped me work through the steps, and she guides me, and I talk with her on a regular basis about what is going on in life and what she suggests. And with that, I know that everything she tells me to do or suggests me to do, she's done before and walked through it. And if she doesn't, then there's someone else she knows that can help me walk through it. You know, like, I remember the first time I had someone pass away in my life. Like, I had no comprehension what to do, but I knew not to drink. But then I knew that, you know, my friends in AA at the time just surrounding me, they got me to meetings, they made sure I ate. You know, there's just a different connection. And I walked through it, you know, and so now I know how to do that. And so now part of that, I think, is being around that and being here for a long time, is that I get to pass that along and I get to teach the next person how to do that, you know. And it's to me, being a part of AA is now is a part of paying it forward. Like, I can't ever thank that first person that sat in the room and said it's going to be okay and you don't ever have to live that away again, just to know and believe them. And then give that to the next person is just a gift that you can't really describe until you experience it. And so that's why I think that every day, yeah, I am an alcoholic. And today I don't have to live that way. I don't have to live looking for the next drink. You know, I get to live free of that as long as I do certain things, which is like go to a meeting, call an AA friend, help a person who needs help. Sometimes pick up the phone at 2 a.m. because someone's struggling, or, you know, sit with them, do whatever to make sure they don't drink if they really don't want to. I think it's a really small price to pay for, like, this great, amazing life that I have today.
And Jill, you've been, as you said, sober for 25 years, and you mentioned paying it forward. I'm wondering, are you a sponsor now? And if you are, or if you've been there, how does the dynamic of being a member of AA change when you reach that step?
It changes in this. I do have a couple girls that say that I'm their sponsor, but we're not actively working together. But if they called, I would help them. What it changes is that, like, what I'm doing, I get to also examine that whatever I tell them to do, I need to be doing myself. So I have to walk the talk. Like, if I tell them, hey, you need to be kind, then I need to be kind too. So it also enriches my life because I get to remember what it was like to not know how to do something and walk them through it. Like, you know, like going for that first job interview and having to explain there's this gap in your employment because you couldn't work or you were arrested. Like, how to explain that away. And then we have a tradition anonymity, so you just have to explain in a different way that you were not able to, you were taking care of something. Just, you know, and being able to start fresh, you know, and like, it's really exciting because you get to see, you know, there's this magic that comes on in people's eyes once they get it and they have this this like peace that comes with them. And it's really amazing to watch it just progress from like this really like, I've screwed up my life and nobody wants to be a part of it. And then all of a sudden their life gets, starts to bloom, and it continues to bloom, you know? And it's a really amazing thing. And then seeing their life get better, like just everything around them. Like I've seen Tara in this last year, like, you know, she didn't think she'd get her kids back. And I kept telling her, you know, it's going to work out. You just have to promise. I didn't know when it was going to work or she'd ever get those kids back. But I promised her that if she continued to show up, go to meetings, do what was ever necessary that they kept asking her to do, it was going to work out. And if it wasn't, it wasn't because she wasn't quite ready to handle the responsibility. You know, and so sometimes it's, I don't know, it's just watching someone grow and become the better person, not the better person, but become the person they were meant to be. You know, it's just watching them, I don't know how to explain it, except watching them grow up and like they get to do this stuff or they get their license back and they can drive themselves to the grocery store, you know, instead of having to walk or call a cab. You know, it's like those first, you know, what other people may take for granted, and when we allow things that we do to take those privileges away and we get them back one by one, it's like this whole process of becoming one and healing the soul.
It sounds like a very unique experience that you just have to go through to understand. Abel, wondering if you can speak to what it's like to have a sponsor and, you know, what you do, how you and a sponsor kind of interact and how, and just how that relationship works.
Well, I was a little stubborn for getting a sponsor when I first started. I didn't want any help. I could do it all by myself. I went up, I heard a guy talking about how he had he had alcoholism and a drug addiction, and how he learned how to live by one day at a time for I believe 29 years he's got now of complete sobriety and being clean. And it was attractive to me. And finally, I went up to him, and I didn't want to bother him with all of my troubles, but I went up to him and said, hey, would you be my temporary sponsor? And, you know, I know how to read all these steps up here on the wall, but I need some help on some of them. And he just kind of giggled, and he said, yeah, I'll help you out. And one by one, he grabbed my hand up and showed me a better way to live. He walked me through the steps one at a time, and it's showing me, he's still showing me how to live a better way. Coming to believe that my life was unmanageable and why and how was a big deal. That was a big step even just to come into the room. It was scary. I didn't want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I got there, it was like, man, really? I went so far away that I had to end up here. And I am so glad I ended up there. And to have a sponsor, somebody who's not only been through addictions like you have, but has been through the steps, and sometimes more than once, more than twice, who has a sponsor and works his steps, it's a pretty amazing friendship and fellowship. It's a relationship with someone that is unlike anything else. For someone to help you learn how to come out of an addiction and to live in a sober way that's an asset to your community on a day-to-day basis, sometimes a hour-to-hour basis. You know, sometimes I get to struggling and I don't know what to do. And my first thought is to go down to the grog shop and get me some. All I have to do is call my sponsor and say, hey, I'm having this thought. What should I do? And so far, he's had the answer for me every time.
All right. I have more for you, Abel, but first I'm going to go ahead and open up our phone lines in case anyone wants to call in and speak with our guests. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-979-5224. That's 1-800-979-5224. And you can call locally, 907-235-7721. That is 235-7721 to call if you're here locally. So, Abel, I want to stick with you because I'm curious about, again, you already said that Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous are pretty similar, but I'm wondering if there are any differences. I noticed you have a Narcotics Anonymous book here with you. Are there any differences that kind of just set the two apart a little bit, or just lead into different experiences?
Yes. I heard somebody say one day that Narcotics Anonymous is a little more colorful. And I'd have to agree. There's in Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody drank alcohol, and that's what got them to the rooms. And when you come to drugs, there's a lot of different kinds of narcotics out there, and a lot of different characters that go with those different drugs. And when they all get together, I just went to the Alaska State Convention for Narcotics Anonymous, and it was very colorful and very loud. And I also have been to the Alcoholics Anonymous State Convention, and it wasn't quite so loud. But everybody had the same message, and everybody was on the same track, to live one day at a time without the use of drugs or alcohol.
Gotcha. Very interesting. So, all right, I'm going to give you a break for a second, Abel, and I'm going to go to Tara. Rachel, I hope you're still with us, still hanging in there. We're going to be talking to you here in a little bit. Tara, I'm curious about other, I know you haven't been here super long, but I'm curious about other treatment options that you might have tried, even in other places that you've lived. But first I'm going to look at here in Alaska, the Kenai Peninsula. Have you tried any other treatment options? And what I'm getting at is, are you still using that, or are you just mainly relying on AA?
When I first moved here, I signed up to go to CICADA, which is a Center for Alcohol and Drug Abuse. I also found a therapist, and I did parenting classes and had one-on-one sessions, which I really felt that was helpful, all while doing the 12-step programs, NA and AA. Now I just am a big part of AA and NA, and I just stay close to that. I stay as close as I can, go to as many meetings as I can. I also have a sponsor that I talk to on a regular basis. I'm very needy. So, I'm scared to not go to the meetings and to work my steps. If I use again, I'm gonna die. I mean, it's that black and white, and I don't wanna die. And so, I just keep going to those meetings, and I keep talking to people that have been there where I am and where I was. It's really cool. I have people calling me now asking me, how are you doing it? So it's showing I'm changing, on the inside out, and it feels really good. But, I don't go to CICADA anymore. I wouldn't mind the therapy again, just because I liked it. I liked my therapist a lot. I have a disease. I suffer from addiction. I'm allergic to alcohol. I'm super allergic to drugs. Like Abel said, I don't have to live like that anymore. I don't have to. I have a choice today, and I'm choosing to live. Like, I don't want to just trudge through life, just not drinking or using, because that'd be hard. I want to find a better way to live life to the fullest,
And, you said you're not going to CICADA anymore. You are not doing the therapy anymore. You're basically relying on what you get out of AA and NA for your treatment. Wondering if you can tell me, what do you think about just the options for alcoholic? And I'm guessing that's just what works for you. But I'm wondering if you can tell me, what do you think about the options here in Homer, on the Kenai Peninsula for alcoholics and people who are addicted to narcotics. What do you think about the way, just the breadth of options and how effective they might be, or how effective having more options might be?
Well, I can only speak on my experience. I needed rehab. I needed to detox. I needed to get away. And what rehab did for me was give me a foundation of what a sober life could be like. You know, I went to a 6-week program in Georgia. I ended up staying 8 weeks the first time I relapsed, and then went back and completed treatment again. And I really felt like that was super helpful to get out of the environment that I was in. And I was introduced to AA there, and I'm so grateful for that. I got an understanding of my God that looks after me. You know, that's a big part of my recovery. That's the biggest part of my recovery. You know, AA is not religious by any means, but, you know, it's by God's grace that I'm sitting here right today talking to you, and being able to share the hope of what this program can offer. Rehab and detox was necessary for my recovery, for sure. Not everybody needs that, but a lot of people do. You know, just to get away, clear your head, think about yourself. Self-care is number one. You know, I didn't know how to take care of myself anymore. And I needed to be around people that could help me to do that and to get focused, because I wasn't focused. I was a mess.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing, Tara. We're going to go over here to Rachel. Thanks for waiting, Rachel. Thank you for being patient. So I'm wondering if you can kind of share for the audience what role you're kind of taking on as you speak to us today. You are with Haven House, but you're also with the MAPS Coalition.
Sure. And no problem waiting. I feel like it's really an honor to hear people's stories, and really am grateful that the individuals in the room are willing to share their stories and experiences. So thank you all for that so much. So like Quentin said, I am the prevention coordinator here at Haven House. Formerly, I was the shelter manager, so the issue of drug and alcohol abuse is, and the positive impact that I've seen AA have on individuals that I've worked with, I just can't be overstated. So once again, I appreciate all of you for being in the room today. My other role in the community is as the coordinator of the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition. And this group or coalition is under the broader MAP umbrella. So for those of you who don't know, MAP stands for Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnership. And it's a community health coalition that was started in 2008. And it was started to conduct sort of health assessments, community health assessments, to look at how our community was doing in a broad sense as far as being a healthy community. And MAP really defines health in a very broad way, beyond just physical health, but emotional health, economic health, spiritual health, environmental health. So MAP took a very broad view of what health looks like in the community. So when it did the first assessment in 2008, and incidentally, it does these assessments every 3 years, and this upcoming year is a health assessment year. So you may have noticed surveys floating around, because one of the great things that MAP does is it asks the community through these broad-based surveys, what are the health challenges you see in the community that are concerning to you? So it tries, the health assessment process also looks at, talks to individuals from the police department, from the hospital, community members. It, you know, they do a broad sort of way of gathering information. But one of the most important pieces is this community-based survey. And in 2008, when they did that survey, what rose to the top was substance abuse and domestic violence as being two of the issues that the community was the most concerned about. So from that first health assessment, a group of organizations, including CICADA, the Cook Inlet Council on Drug and Alcohol Abuse, Haven House, South Peninsula Behavioral Health Center, or the center, formed a work group to try and address the issues of substance abuse and domestic violence in the community. And this is kind of a long route, a long way to go around to tell the story of the Resilience Coalition, because in the second health assessment, the community came back with information that they were worried about sort of a broader category of community health that has been labeled family well-being. So that kind of, as you can imagine, can encompass a lot, but it's still looking at drug abuse and violence as one, and alcohol abuse as one of the most concerning factors for those in our community.
Got you.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what action has the Master Coalition been able to take as far as addressing that, that problem. It's as you said, it's came up as in the assessments as one of the number one problems in the community here on the peninsula. So what action has the Master Coalition been able to take, or what action do you plan to take, do you see needing to happen?
Absolutely, that's a great question. And I think a lot of the action that has happened has been not quite invisible, but a little bit under the radar as far as visibility goes. One of the first things that started to happen when that assessment came out is the forming of a work group between these service organizations to try and coordinate the services that we were providing. So Haven House, CICADA, the center, and working with Office of Children's Services and Sprout, because as was revealed in the personal story, sometimes what things that can happen are involvement of Office of Children's Services when there's an addiction that's being worked through. So what we saw as our role in this sort of service provider perspective was we need to coordinate our services and be able to support people dealing with addiction in a more integrated way, so that you don't have to go, so that there can be a coordinated sort of team approach to supporting individuals who are working through substance abuse. So that's not really very visible, but it has definitely changed how our systems have functioned to some degree. We communicate a lot better with each other. We have team meetings when Office of Children's Services is involved to try and support the family in a more coordinated way. So that's one of the changes that has happened, and it's been a slow change. Another thing that has been a topic of discussion, and I really feel where we need to go from here and where the Resilience Coalition is hoping to really find some leadership, someone who wants to step up and help with this effort, is looking at the treatment options that exist on the peninsula and in Homer specifically, and seeing what gaps exist and where we can strengthen those options so that individuals who are dealing with substance abuse and addiction can find support here in the community. Because as it stands, we don't have any inpatient treatment here in Homer. So if you do decide to go to rehab, the closest one is in Kenai, and there are several options in Anchorage. And then I feel like there's also a particular gap for youth that are dealing with these issues. So how to provide effective support to youth in the community. Because we know that if the addiction starts young or the use starts young, then the chances of dealing with that dependence or addiction for the rest of your life are much higher. So we're also looking at prevention. I don't know if I answered your question with very tangible things we're working on. I think there's a lot of work left to do.
Right. And, You answered it very nicely, actually. Basically, you guys are working to, you're basically working together to use the services that you're already providing to better support the people that need them, is basically what I'm getting from you. And also, you are evaluating what gaps are there in the services that are already being provided here in Homer and on the peninsula. Is there a next step other than that, than what you already said?
Yeah, well, I think one other piece that the Resilience Coalition is sort of coordinating is youth education around drugs and alcohol. So in coordination with the Rec Room through Kachemak Bay Family Planning Clinic, Haven House provides some education about really trying to build up emotional capacity, particularly in eighth graders. We work with the eighth grade health class a lot, and to identify to build skills that could help, that are shown to be protective factors in both drug and alcohol use and in violence, so dating violence, domestic violence, and sexual violence. So I think one of the places we'd like to focus is really on prevention, particularly when it comes to some of the heavier drugs. I know that it's been a topic of discussion on the community-wide level that there's an increase in meth use in Homer and on the peninsula, and I think nationwide. And so that's of real concern to organizations and individuals in the community as far as what does that mean for our youth as meth becomes more available, because it's pretty scary to think that that drug might be accessible to youth in the community. And so how are we going to prevent that from becoming a serious problem? And one of the things I think we'd like to do is apply for a drug-free communities grant. It's a federal grant that we could apply for as a coalition that might help with some strategies to address preventing drug and alcohol use. So that's a goal for the spring.
Got you. Thank you, Rachel. I'm going to go back to our guests here in the studio, starting with you, Jill. Wondering if you can kind of speak to what you have observed just with your own eyes here in our community as far as the prevalence of alcohol abuse and substance abuse, the community, your friends, family. Is there anything that you can add there?
First, it's just my opinion. I know that alcohol is readily available in our town. We have the map. I see it, but I don't honestly pay much attention to it because it's a great structure. Alcoholism runs rampant. I don't know who put it out, so I'm not as informed, but it was like, there was a survey they went out for a while that only, like, I want to know what, like, people drank 2 or 3 drinks in the Homer community area, which I think went up to Nanochik in the study. But then when you read our Homer news and you read the town crier, there's about 4 or 5 driving under their influences every week. So it makes me wonder, maybe some people were barely intoxicated, but they still got a driving under the influence, or they're driving without a license with alcohol or substances attached to it. So I think there's a lot more, and some people aren't just ready and to be done with drinking. You know, that's just a way of life, and that's just how they've done it. And, you know, it just comes to each individual's preference of when they get help or if they don't get help. Some people think that they don't need the help, and that's just how life is. So it just kind of varies. And in that sense, so I think there's a lot more. I think definitely there's drugs available if you want them in this town. You know, I don't really know, you know, how relevant it is anymore. I do know that it exists. I do know that the drugs are cheaper now, and it's quite evident with the changes with people. I know that I know a few friends that their heroin has taken much more of a larger toll in their personal lives and family and losing children than it did before. And so there's that aspect. And so it's hard because it's just, it all, at the end of the day, you know, you can have $50 million put into different programs, but it comes down to an individual choice of when they're done and if they've been harmed enough or they've done enough damage to themselves and people around them that they want to quit and want a different life. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if your doctor says, hey, you're allergic to sugar, or if you're allergic to wheat, but you still want to eat a biscuit, you're going to eat a biscuit. You know, nobody's going to stop you from doing it at the end of the day. It's your choice.
Thank you very much, Jill.
Quentin, can you hear me? This is Rachel.
Yes, we hear you, Rachel.
Oh, I just wanted to jump in, if that's okay. I really appreciate what Jill was saying about how, because one of the questions we want to look at is what kind of community norms and community culture do we have? Do we have a community culture that normalizes heavy drinking? I think by looking at the blotter and seeing how many people drive under the influence, that maybe we do have a community culture that accepts that. Or if you look at the number of community events that involve alcohol, are there options where alcohol is not a central theme of the event? Or are most of our performances, are they mostly held in bars? So there's some bigger questions to look at as far as how do we start creating a community that is really safe for people who choose to be sober, that promotes sobriety or healthy use of alcohol, and is more supportive for other choices besides just drinking or using. You know, there's that bumper sticker, which that exists all across Alaska, but also in Homer, you know, that we're a quaint little drinking village with a fishing problem. And you can sort of laugh that off, but if you start to look at, how does that manifest in our community culture, and what message is that sending? And also, what message is that sending to our young people as far as what their choices around alcohol should be? So I think that was a really important thing to bring up.
Right, and this is all while keeping in mind that drinking is going to continue as just recreation. I'm not going to say most adults, but a large number of adults are going to always enjoy drinking. So is that just something to keep in mind as well as that alcohol drug use is also very detrimental?
Yeah, I think that it's that balance, right? Because certainly there's, and I think the message that Jill was referring to that came out from the Homer Prevention Project, which isn't really active anymore, about most adults in Homer only drink one or two drinks when they choose to drink, which was based on two different surveys, was trying to promote that message that healthy or responsible ways of drinking is common in Homer, and that we may, and it was a kind of addressing a gap in perception where there was a perception that in Homer that most people are binge drinking, and according to the survey, that's not the case. But that doesn't mean that alcohol addiction is not a huge problem. So there's kind of this fine line of allowing and promoting response, you know, like drinking habits for folks who don't struggle with addiction, that are responsible and reasonable, like you said, recreational. But then also, how do you promote a culture that also accepts and supports sobriety and really is supportive for those in recovery? Because I'm not sure how well will Homer strikes that balance sometimes.
Thank you very much, Rachel. And Tara, I'm going to pick on you because I saw you nodding your head earlier when Rachel was discussing whether or not we have a community that is more accepting or that regularly promotes drinking and that, you know, that type of activity when people are looking for recreation. Wondering if that is, you know, what you think, that Homer does, in fact, kind of, I don't want to say cater, but is, you know, not at all going to turn, it's not at all going to say, see drinking in a negative light?
Well, for me, I love live music, you know, and the only place to see it usually is in a bar. And this early in my sobriety, a bar is not really a good, safe place for me to be. I don't trust myself in a bar right now. And, you know, I wish there was other places and things to do for people in recovery to go and feel safe, like, you know, away from temptation. You know, there comes a time where you're going to be around drinking. I mean, I've been to a couple of weddings and not drank. But, you know, I did a lot of homework before I went to these weddings. I knew exactly what to do, who to call, how to feel, how not to feel. Homer's a drinking town. It's kind of what it's known for. They got the salty dog, the world famous salty dog on the spit. And, you know, I've only been here not even 2 years yet. And I feel like as a whole, home, you know, is socially acceptable to party, you know. It's a tourist town. That's what people come here to do, fish and drink.
Gotcha. And so it makes it a little bit difficult sometimes. Sometimes for you, it makes it a little bit more difficult as a recovering alcoholic.
Yes.
Gotcha. And Abel, would you say the same?
Well, we do live in a unique community. We are at the end of the road and the beginning of the sea. I grew up as a fisherman, and I remember when you could just see the lights of the spit and that lighthouse light. It was the boat couldn't go fast enough. Everybody on the crew was ready to hit the salty dog, leaving the boat for the captain to tie up. And when I was an active drinker and a drug user, it was all readily accessible. It is all over in our community. But since I have decided that I didn't need that in my life, It's not in my life. It's not around me. It's not in the people that are around me. I choose to do different things in my community that does not involve drugs or alcohol. I hang out with people that don't do drugs or drink, and I'm pretty busy. I thought if I live in Homer and I don't drink, there's nothing to do, and I'm a pretty busy guy. I've got a good job. I'm active in my church community, and active in my fellowship, and with the people in the fellowship, you know, there's different functions to do. If you want that in your life, if you don't, then it can be pretty lonely. But we have a beautiful community that's full of all kinds of activities to do outside of the bar. There's a lot of hiking trails. There's a lot of fishing. We have a beautiful place to live in, and a lot of places to go. You don't have to be active in addiction.
Right. So you'd say that even though the culture in Homer is very accepting of drinking in some cases, it's still not, you know, the all-in be-all. You can still find many ways to live your life here without having to go back from where you came.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like this part of this time of the year, we have the Nutcracker. There's all kinds of church functions going on, different plays, families getting together, potlucks. We have a bowling alley. We have many beaches, and we have the most beautiful view in the world right here in Homer, Alaska.
Thank you very much, Abel. I appreciate that, and I want to compliment on you on your Santa hat also. That really sets the mood off in here. Thank you very much for bringing it.
Thank you.
So we are running down to about 5 minutes before the end of the show. I want to just go around the table and ask everyone if they would like to, if there's anything else that you guys would like to share before we end. I'm going to start with you, Jill.
I just wanted to add one touch. You know, it's as you get sober, and you learn how to coexist. I mean, it's not like I can go through life and know that there's never going to be alcohol anywhere. I can't live in a bubble. But what I do know is that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me whenever I need to be in a social situation where there is alcohol, then I need to check my personal motives. You know, and am I in a place where, like, I'm romancing the ability that I could, like, drink like a lady? And it looks so romantic, or am I there because I have a function, you know? And so that's one thing to remember, that, like, it's not like, oh, I can't be sober and homer because there's drinking. No, there's alcohol everywhere, but it really comes down to an individual learning how to coexist. You know, you coexist. I mean, just like if you didn't like the snow and you live in Homer, well, you're going to have to learn how to coexist at some point. You know, you may not like it, but you learn to co-live with it. It's around. Mother Nature does it for us. We can't do much with it. And the other thing is just know that if you have any type of problem with alcohol or drugs, there's a place to get help and learn how to do life. It doesn't mean that your life has to be miserable. You have to continue to live that way. You can do it differently. And I'm certain that your life will improve 10 times better than you ever imagined it.
Thank you very much, Jill. Abel, you're up next. Is there anything else that you think needs to be said that you'd like to put out there before we end the show?
Yeah. If drugs and if alcohol are making your life unmanageable, you don't have to live like that anymore. There's a better way to live.
Thank you very much, Abel. Tara, anything else you want to share? If you don't have anything, you don't have anything.
Yeah. I don't know. I just want to offer, you know, hope, because if I can get clean and sober from the mess that I was living in and the stuff that I was doing, like, it is possible for anybody to get sober. And like being that way, I'm finally getting comfortable with being that way, because at first it's super uncomfortable. There's always a place to go. It's not a I program, it's a we program. Don't have to go through it alone, ever.
Thank you very much. And Rachel, is there anything that you would like to throw out there before we take off?
Well, I just appreciate the message of hope and the reminder that we live in a beautiful place with so many different opportunities. And I hope that as a community we can work to continue to make those opportunities accessible to people. And also, I'd really love to see anyone who wants to get involved in working on the prevention of youth starting to use alcohol or drugs, to be in touch with MAP or the Resilience Coalition or me here at Haven House, because we know if we can prevent that first use of drugs or alcohol, then it's easier in the long run. If kids can wait until their brain is done developing by the age of 25 to really experiment with drugs and alcohol, then their chances of being addicted are much lower. So we're trying to look at ways to work together to build a community that helps our youth make that kind of choice. So I look forward to working with anyone who wants to participate in this effort.
Thank you very much, Rachel. And I just want to say thank you to our guests here in the studio today. You guys mentioned that how difficult it was to go into your first AA meetings. I can only imagine it must be extremely difficult to come on and talk about this on the radio, so I appreciate it. This is the end of the coffee table here on KPBI AM 890 Homer. Thank you for joining us. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next. It's 10 o'clock.